root of all evil? Many New Age therapists, practitioners, make a huge deal of the terms prosperity, abundance, manifesting money, deserving wealth, etc. Needless to say, this point is being made due to our innate belief we don't have it, don't deserve it, or that we are in some way resisting it. Many books have been written about the fact that there is nothing wrong with money and that we need to get over our psychological trauma, whether from childhood or just our present belief in poverty consciousness, in order to thrive in our world. Even the Bible is used to clarify that the quotation, "For the love of money is the root of all evil," is not "money is the root of all evil." Inevitably, someone will mention Jesus in the temple throwing over the tables of the tax collectors. Why did he do this? It's one of the few references in the Bible where Jesus allegedly loses his temper. Was it the tax collectors he so loathed, or was it that commerce was being carried out in his temple? Who knows? I have had a love/hate relationship with money my entire life, and I'm certain I'm not alone in this. It took me years to reconcile. I realized that money is indeed the problem, rather, represents the problem. I became ripping tired of hearing, "Money is just an exchange of energy, it's only bad if you say it's bad, there is nothing inherently wrong with money, it's how it's used that matters. Money, as with everything else in the world, is only how we think of it, there is enough money for everyone," etc. All this is rubbish for the sole purpose of justifying and assuaging our fear, as, in our hearts, we know there is something inherently wrong with the concept of money. All the wrong on this planet is due to someone's belief that money will improve their circumstances. In her book, Atlas Shrugged, Ayn Rand says, "The lovers of money are willing to work for it. They know they are able to deserve it." As much as I love Rand's philosophy, objectivism and ethic of rational self-interest, she is approaching it from a belief that money exists, since her books were all written prior to the revelation that there is no money. It was virtually unknown until somewhat recently, even though the bankruptcy is 70 years old, in the US, older in Canada, since Canada was never solvent. This, and all philosophies about money, include that we are meant to work for it. I have no fear of work, but not for something of no substance, and certainly not for something which is keeping me enslaved. I notice that it is the pittance which keeps people stuck in jobs they hate. If there were no pay, would you continue to do what you are doing? We living souls were never meant to operate in commerce, only the strawman can do so. Just as in Monopoly trademark, we resent that we have to pay the debts that the race car/strawman incurs. When I was a kid, my friends thought I had gone off the deep end after I picked up a chance card which told me I had to pay the minister for a marriage ceremony. I told them that I would never have to pay something like that because I would never get married. Wow. I resentfully paid it to the banker and realized that I might be taking this game a bit too seriously. As much as I cursed the charges of the game, I was still racing to go in order to collect my $200. We are all doing this. We ought either to accept the terms of the game and quit complaining or quit playing. We can't have it both ways. Money is the most tangible evidence in our entire existence of our belief in our separation from one another. This, and only this, is why it is the root of all evil. It is the biggest, most common demonstration of our belief that we are not all one. We use money every day, albeit often interpreted as an exchange, yet by far more often it is clearly regarded as a payment for not much. One of my favorite stories to demonstrate this is Ram Dass making an album years ago. His father asked him what he intended to charge for it. "About $6, just my costs." His father, an attorney, need I say more, was stunned. "You can get way more for it than that." Ram Dass responded, "Remember last summer Uncle Harry came to you for legal advice? What did you charge him?" "Nothing, Uncle Harry is family." Ram Dass replied, "Anyone who buys my album is family." Expand to include we have all experienced the feelings of importance, gratitude, love, and also relief when someone gives us a break on cost. Is it possible for us to expand our circle of friends and family to include any friend of yours is a friend of mine? It is said that we are only 6 people away from anyone on the planet. I think that we are also connected at a particular level of consciousness that somehow we all realize that anyone, even from a completely different culture, religion, country, race, is myself. If we were all family, we would feel no compunction about doing what we do and charging nothing. Well, we are all family, why are we charging for what we do? Is it because too many of us are doing what we 75 don't want to do and so we are subconsciously demanding compensation for our suffering? Whose fault is it that we are doing something that doesn't grant us joy? Why not stop doing what we don't enjoy doing? What if we were all doing what we love to do? Would we feel as if we needed to be compensated? Why? I have heard several rapid eye technicians, including me, claim, "I love doing rapid eye so much, if I didn't need to pay the rent, I'd do it for free." Along the way we've also conjured up this absurd idea that if we don't pay for something we don't appreciate it. Says who? People who feel guilty about charging and feel they have to defend it, that's who. Some of my dearest possessions I have received at no cost. Think of an item you bought on sale, don't you actually feel better about the object for having gotten a bargain? I agree that the ego believes it doesn't deserve something for nothing, however, this is a problem with an egotistical belief system which requires release and healing. It is never the circumstances which require healing, there is nothing outside the mind. So paying for something in order to appreciate it is just another con game of the ego mind, and anyone who repeats it is again falling for the belief that we are separate from one another. My mother said of my father, "He knows the price of everything and the value of nothing." I have learned that, one, the higher the cost of something the less value it ends up having, two, if someone is charging me an extortive amount for something then he doesn't really want me to have it. If he doesn't want me to have it, why might I want it? 3. Since I began doing what I want to do, I have received by far more than I would have received had I charged someone for my doing what I want to do or doing what I don't want to do. The big win is that I have more people in my life. Since it is only people who can get me what I want and need, this is by far better than having cash to hand over to the corporations for something they have caused me to believe I want and don't truly want. People tell me that they are paying for information obtained by one who has put in hours of research. But didn't he do this research because he wanted to? Why are we paying for something that someone did because he wanted to do it? I have no problem paying someone for doing what they don't want to spend their time doing, but not for something they did out of love. So, what about paying the rent? My guess is the answer to this lies in trust and faith. If we are indeed doing what we love to do, we find ourselves vibrating at a very high level at which we manage to attract not only what we require but also what we desire. Many books, e.g., Lynn Grabhorn's Excuse Me, Your Life is Waiting, reference this, and so I shan't elucidate. One who so appreciates what we do might want to show his appreciation and ask how he can do this. A good response might be, "Well, the rent is due. I figure for all those who are still believing that they lose when someone else wins, doing what we love to do will set us at such a high vibrational level that we will automatically attract those who have nothing better to do than to hand over to you that which you need, since contractually it would seem to them that you have already done the same." After years of having understood intellectually, I finally got it. If I go into anything with a sense of what I might lose, whether dollar, time, compensation, or energy, I am not doing what I love to do, and hence, it simply won't work for me. When we do precisely what we want to do, for the sole purpose of pleasing ourselves, it is a win/win for all involved. Objectivism versus collectivism. We have been so deceived by everyone in every place we have ever frequented, school, church, family, that selfishness won't work and caritability does work. For whom? All that has occurred is that those with the vested interests have essentially emotionally blackmailed us into doing for them and not for us. This can be interpreted as slavery. The guilt attached to it serves not us but those who suggest we work for them. The Protestant work ethic was made up by slave owners, not slaves. "Don't quit your day job" is a perfect example of emotional blackmail. My son is a musician, my job is to encourage him and not say, "But how are you going to support yourself?" A definition of evil is selling or trading our aliveness for survival. Deepak Chopra told his children, you are meant to do whatever allows you happiness. I will always make sure you are fed and housed. Your job is to reflect the power and love and joy of your Creator by doing what you've been created to do. Now, let's attach these ideas. When we work for anyone, including I work for myself, or how about, self-employed? Aren't these great cliches to manipulate us into working but making it sound as if we are the beneficiaries? When we work, by definition, financial compensation is the result. But what exactly is the financial compensation? $$ is a very poor show of appreciation for what we do out of love, never mind for what we are not wanting to do. I know you think you receive something for your hours of labor. You do not. You receive a piece of 76 paper with numbers on it, the date, a dollar figure, a strawman name, and a signature. So far, you have received nothing of value for your labor. Now, take it over to the bank and sign your name on the back, commonly called endorsement, and lo and behold, you receive money. Nice try. There is no money. What you received are other pieces of paper with more numbers on them. Can you use them? Sort of. If you are smart, you'll get rid of them as fast as possible, for several reasons. 1. They have no intrinsic value. Notes cost pennies to make, no matter what their denomination. It costs the feds as little to print a $500 note as a $5 note, so your dollar is barely worth the paper it's printed on. 2. You are holding debt notes. Debt notes carry liability in the form of interest. You will get stuck with the interest on this debt if you don't trade them for something of value ASAP. 3. As long as they are in your possession, you have yet to be compensated for your labor. Since they will do you no good until you trade them, hanging on to them will not serve you. I am reminded of a native poem: only after the last tree has been cut down, only after the last river has been poisoned, only after the last fish has been caught, only then will you find that money cannot be eaten. I ask people, if I could give you anything you want, what might that be? They always say, money. But if that's all they want, then that's all they'll get, not what they think it will buy them. If I were to give them $1 million, in a safe, then that's all they'll have, without the combination to the safe. They now think they can go and buy a house. Yet, if the house is indeed what they want, why didn't they tell me, a house? People don't truly know what they want. Why make this a two-step process? Why have to go shopping when they can simply manifest the house? Why bother manifesting cash? Manifest precisely what you want, not what you think you want. Attachment to anything outside ourselves depletes our peace of mind. Can we ever detach from $$? Since $$$ and its use represent the belief that we are separate and in competition with each other, if we were to change our minds about this, then $$$ would cease to exist. We simply wouldn't need it. When we clear our personal stuff, we can go cosmic. Barbara Marciniak, property taxes. I don't think we have a lot of time. We must discharge the banksters' debts for them, or they will become more and more desperate. Desperate times call for desperate measures. If the debt that the banksters created, using as collateral the properties we are presently using and which we believe belong to us, houses, autos, our bodies, etc., is not discharged, and only we have the lawful right, means, and energy to do this, we will find ourselves without the use of said property because we have neglected to claim it as such. Property taxes, along with all other taxes, will increase to the point where we can no longer afford to hang on to the property. I recall Dr. Zhivago, upon his arrival home, discovering many families living in his house. This scene horrified me most when I saw the movie at age 17. Never mind the mortgage, the interest, or the market. The banks/feds will raise property taxes past the point where we can afford them, and they will simply foreclose. The name of their game is to confiscate as much of our property as possible. The feds become more frantic as each day passes as the IMF tightens the screws on them. The fact that interest rates are at an all-time low ought to give one pause. Think about it, low interest rates are prompting us to buy property. When we are all indebted, they will hike property taxes and get all their property back unless we know how to stop paying property tax, which is simply a case of declining to do so. Get onto it. I have written my premier, the finance minister, the provincial tax advisor, and none has been able to provide me with any law requiring me to pay property taxes. When I asked a woman at the province of Alberta for an example of a provincial tax as opposed to a federal tax, she said, "Oh, ma'am, there are hundreds of provincial taxes." Did this make my day, or what? I was seized and put into jail because, as I have elsewhere related, I did not pay a tax to, or recognize the authority of, the state which buys and sells men, women, and children like cattle at the door of its Senate House. I had gone down to the woods for other purposes, but wherever a man goes, men will pursue and paw him with their dirty institutions, and if they can, constrain him to belong to their desperate 77-odd fellow society. It is true I might have resisted forcibly with more or less effect, might have run amok against society, but I preferred that society should run amok against me, it being the desperate party. Henry David Thoreau, 1854. There will always be men who will try to talk us out of our freedom. Rice McLeod. Think of the game of musical chairs. There simply are not enough chairs, $$$ to pay interest, to go around. Those who are forced to leave the game, as there is not enough money in the economy to pay back all the debt the banks have created by their expansion of credit, and profited from creating it, will lose all they have worked to accrue. It is the banks which will receive the hard asset, representing the fruits of your labor, and you have to start all over, with nothing. Who sets the interest rates in this country? The interest rate, e.g., 6%, is always commensurate with the percentage of those who will go bankrupt. The bankster's crime of premeditated expansion of the debt beyond the amount of money in circulation will create a predetermined number of innocent victims, commensurate to the percentage of interest that the banks charge each year. Yet, banks cannot commit this crime without our giving them our signed promissory note, so we can hypothecate a certain number of years of our future labor in order to use the bank's equivalent of money, right now, in the present. Until interest, which is being applied to the credit extended by banks, is eliminated, the people will remain slaves to the credit system, which is the banking and monetary system of the world. The property will be lost all because we have been deliberately misled into believing that it was ours and we failed to take the necessary steps to protect it, namely being sure property is in our true lawful names, and discharging the alleged debt which they have made up as a means to confiscate our assets. The entire process is their means to take what we think is ours for their ultimate purpose of control. This does not need to happen. It will be via our neglect. All they want is to have their debts discharged. Only we can do this for them. As long as we pay for what we believe to be our debts with debt instruments, their debt becomes only more massive. Already they are saying it is impossible to pay back. Well, of course it is impossible to pay because there is nothing with which to pay. It is, however, so simple to discharge, it can be done in an instant. You might well ask, well, if they want us to discharge their debt for them, why don't they just say so and we'll be only too happy to comply, then we'd all be happy. Why the subterfuge? You forget that they want the debt for the sole purpose of confiscating our property for their ultimate control. The fact that we think we labored for it is more of the same propaganda. All property will revert back to a belligerent, foreign corporation, the IMF, and where will we be after we all lose our houses and cars? Dare I say detention camps? Where else will we have to go? Properties are being foreclosed by the thousands every day. Do you still believe it is because we lived beyond our means? We never had to pay for any of those things we believed we bought anyway, they were already ours. Many of us are filing the correct papers to ensure that what we believe we paid for does indeed remain ours. This must be done. If you have not actively recorded your property, including your children and grandchildren, in your true title/name, you will lose your property, and your descendants, it is just a question of time. None of this has to occur. We have two ways out, and I suggest you begin now to implement them. The first is to establish your property as your own, and the second, which is vastly more important, is to practice remembering that none of this matters. What does matter is our peace of mind. We must do that which will grant us the greatest peace and the greatest joy. We must forgive those for what we think they did to us, including the international banksters. This is blatantly the one I'm working on. We must grant our souls some freedom by knowing that house or no house, we can live in joy. Most of the people on the planet live without the houses like what we have. I'm not saying they live in joy, yet I contend they might be able to live in joy if they weren't incessantly reminded of how we live. They actually think we are happier than they because of the things we think we own. All minds think alike. This is classic egoistic belief in punishment. They, like the rest of us, believe they are not good enough. It only manifests in a different manner based upon their individual experiences. Remember the Grinch who stole Christmas? He was forced to realize that the people in Whoville could remain happy even after he had taken from them what he believed they required to make them happy. The joke was on him. I ask that you keep this in mind when you are forced to give up your alleged assets, which are really your liabilities as long as you let your possessions possess you, whether it be your dollar, your house, or even your body. Earhart said, the only thing I don't have is the direct experience that there is 78 nothing I need and nothing I don't have. We are already complete and whole and we don't require the almighty dollar for our survival, and if what we are doing for survival is what we don't want to be doing, then we ought to recall that, from a spiritual perspective, trading our aliveness for dollar is evil. The holographic mind, all the energy that ever was, is, or can be, is already here. Energy is all there is. Energy is neither created nor destroyed. Our thoughts are energy. Nothing else is energy since everything occurs in our minds. So, the Big Bang was the manifestation of our thought, just one thought which occurred in an instant, and with that thought, we created / miscreated the entire known universe all at once, the entire hologram, everything. Our consciousness can go anywhere it wants and focus on anything, any time, any space, any entity that it wants. Within a hologram there is no time and no space. Herein lies our consciousness. What we continue to do is just run around in this hologram just like a kid at the midway, trying different perspectives, lives, times, places, people, etc. Great fun. What an experiment. Understanding the way the mind works is exigent. What happens is that we have a thought, rather, thoughts have us. 85% of them are negative because they arise from the ego mind which lives in fear. This is why what we experience in life seems to be somewhat negative. Thoughts are the energy which creates everything. Because we have senses, we sense that things are not as we would like them, and we strive to change the circumstances rather than change our thoughts. As Marianne Williamson said, changing our circumstances is like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. What sometimes happens is that through increased information, unbeknownst to our conscious mind, we do change our thoughts, which fleetingly affords us to change our circumstances, which then change our perceptions, which then change our beliefs, which then begin to create more workable thoughts which create circumstances more to our liking. What works best is if we can release the old programming, because then we are clear to create what we want. We need to stop the fear-based thinking which is so ingrained in us that we consider it natural. It is not. Collectively we have created our world. Truth is, if we want to know what is going on in our minds, we need only observe our circumstances. If we are happy with our circumstances, we can conclude that our minds are somewhat happy, and vice versa. Our circumstances follow our thoughts. Nothing is created without thought. Thought is the only source of energy. Energy is what it takes to create, and energy is all there is. We have cause and effect reversed. Our belief in time and space is what keeps us from knowing real cause and effect. Our circumstances are the result of our thinking, so our judging any situation is based upon our belief that circumstances came first and our response is the result. You don't get to vote on the way it is, you already did. Werner Erhard, since thoughts are creative energy, we must be vigilant about how we spend our energy. Praying for things that don't exist, i.e., things of this world, will get us nothing. So we pray to change our perceptions, or we pray in gratitude, it is done, wasa. Prayers are then answered, and so it is, Ispevo. I prayed for a bicycle until I realized God doesn't work that way. So, I stole a bicycle and then prayed for forgiveness. Emo Phillips, the powers that be don't want us, whom they consider the enemy, to know their secrets. They promote each of us as the other's competition, when in fact our opposition is way closer to home, our very own ego mind. If we continue to believe that what is going on in the world is real and creates fear for us, we must consider that we are continuing to create it. If we want to change the world, which exists only in our own minds, we must first change our minds about the world. When we fear, we serve only the dark entities which thrive on our fear. When we rise above fear, they cease to exist, at least in our minds. And seeing as everything exists only in our minds, they will cease to exist except for those who choose to keep them alive by paying their attention to them. We will win. We are watching a horror movie which ends well. Keep up your spirits in anticipation for the famous final scene. I loathe emails which detail all the woes of the world. I write back, I sure hope you are getting paid by the PTB to promote their agenda for them. When we are told something over and over, as in programming and mind manipulation, the public fool system, media, government propaganda, TV advertising, TV news, satanic ritualistic cult abuse, billboards, sexual abuse, etc., with any emotion surrounding it, e.g., the official story on the WTC demolitions, then the subconscious mind/ego accepts it as true and incorporates it into its belief system. When the truth confronts us, it is automatically rejected. It simply doesn't fit into the belief system. It's like trying to file into your 79 documents folder two separate articles with the same title. The computer rejects the second one, even though the second file has the more accurate information, or you wouldn't be bothering to file it. The computer is at least smart enough to request you either change the name of the second file or dump the original, which is what most people do, since the original is no longer true. But the ego mind is more tenacious than a computer because there is emotional identity behind it. Hence, we find closed-minded people who actually think they know what's going on in the world, when in fact, it's all just propaganda. Based upon this premise, I offer a solution to what appears to be the sole problem of the world, with the intention that once we have information about what seems to be yet isn't, we can change our minds about it, which will empower us to change our beliefs about who we are, which will allow us to change the world, which, by the way, doesn't exist except as a projection of our minds. Thoughts never leave their source, they boomerang. Problem reaction solution. The ego mind tells us that it will solve all our problems for us. What it doesn't tell us is that it is the cause of all our problems. Does this sound like something we've heard from some other entity? I'm from the government and I'm here to help. The ego/government has a plan. 1. Create a problem. 2. Wait until there is outcry and demand to solve said problem. 3. Reluctantly agree to find a solution for said problem, the cost of which is, in some form, further erosion of our rights and/or integrity, not to mention, already in the works, because this was the plan of the ego/problem creators in the first place. There are no problems apart from the mind. Krishnamurti Gary Renard wrote a book, based upon ACIM, which is entitled, The Disappearance of the Universe. Intuitively, I sense that those of us who are taking action based upon our knowledge of who we are in fact in the process of disappearing the universe. We are stopping our projection of the ego mind and hence its manifestation of fear. Since the government is only a projection of the ego mind and we are choosing to rise above it and function from a perspective of knowing who we are and treating the feds etl accordingly, we will soon cause their demise. They will cease to exist. Renard makes it very clear that as soon as we stop paying attention to low energy level mirages, they simply disappear, because the only thing which allows them to exist in the first place is our attention, our energy. When we choose no longer to focus on what the PTB want us to focus, and begin to look elsewhere towards our fellows, they will simply cease to exist. When we change the way we look at things, the things we look at change. Dr. Wayne Dyer, those who are worried about a cashless society, for example, are only keeping alive the terrifying plan of the ego's solution for salvation. I think that it is we who will create the cashless society, which will appear scary at first, but it will come as a result of our removing ourselves from the commerce game. It will cease to matter to those of us who no longer choose to play the game. Mind and time are inseparable. If we're experiencing time, we are in our minds, and if we are experiencing our minds, we are in time. Aging is the passage of time, and those who seem not to age are those who spend less time in their heads. Nothing happens without energy. The only source of energy is thought. If one feels the emotion of joy, the vibration in the body is increased and extends out and attracts similar. Thoughts are low energy, hence the vibration in the body is diminished and can alter cellular structure. It extends out and attracts similar. Psychotherapy: all emotion comes from a thought, which comes from an interpretation, which comes from a perception of an event originating as a projection of the mind. If we don't see this and the emotion is negative and fails to get released, it will get stashed into the body part which we associate with the alleged event. Psychotherapists make real a traumatic incident by lecturing a client on how to cope, rather than acknowledging the client's anxiety and allowing for its release. Their purpose is to make up plans to handle various situations so the client gets stuck with solutions to problems, as opposed to being empowered to aid, create a perception whereby everyone wins. Too much time and talk, and hence, cost is wasted by the learning of this worthless information, when all that's necessary is to be vigilant, see any and all ostensibly negative situations as the same, the opportunity to heal and heal them in the now, because there is no time. Rather than many strategies which only reinforce the belief that what is happening is real, there is only one creative answer: acknowledge it, release it, and forgive it. Simple, but not easy. With children, and adolescents in particular, not only will they not hear, but also there exists no lecture on what to do about a problem, because there is no problem. We who employ energy psychology see clients as whole and perfect. Their only need is to release the blocks to their realization of this. The ego gets a bunch of mileage/kilometerage out of psychotherapy. Sadly, most therapies reinforce a problem by making it real and then pretend to solve a problem which never really existed except in the mind, and their attempt usually involves solving it outside the mind. They encourage talk therapy and teach coping mechanisms, thereby further making the alleged problem real, come from a presumption that it has a past along with a cause that can be changed, and in the end there is erosion of our personal rights, when all that is required is to get the problem released. The more we put our egos onto the job, the more real it seems and the less chance there is to rid the alleged problem. Our behavior is always the result of our emotions, which is why we do such strange things, most of the time. We are reacting from old emotional trauma which has imprinted not only the event but also the reaction. We just keep returning to what was once upon a time a great solution to a traumatic event, yet, as adults, it no longer works. This is why I do energy work to release trauma and ego programming from childhood. It is difficult for us to behave as adults when our responses to upsets were formed when we are very young. Since there is no new upset, except maybe war, yet keep in mind we have probably all had access to that experience within the hologram, everything is just a reminder of an older similar upset. Our responses are never inventive, they are the old tapes playing over and over again. Remember Ram Dass' book, Be Here Now? He wasn't kidding. None of us is really here now usually. Episodically, we might be here, yet if we are, it isn't now, and if we are in the now, we are probably not here. Based upon Krishnamurti's, there are no problems apart from the mind, all problems can be healed only within the mind, yet since our ego mind thinks that it is our only mind, it tells us that it has the answer. Yet it is the mind which created the problem in the first place. Talk about the blind leading the blind. We cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. Einstein in rapid eye technology: talking is kept to a minimum. Blinking and breathing is the way to release trauma. Imagine the hours wasted and dollars spent in therapies where the very cause of the problem is placated, pampered, and allowed to exacerbate by a therapist who has been hired to rid the problem. Since release of something that doesn't really exist, except in the mind, is instantaneous, any more than a few hours of therapy is redundant. People are getting fleeced into believing that their problems will take time and money to solve when in fact they are unsolvable. All that needs to occur is that they get released. This is a very brief process. But since the ego is already in charge, and we know this because of the effect it has had on us, all we are doing by consulting a psychotherapist is going along with an insane notion set forth by the ego, which is getting agreement to the idea that we have a problem. The therapist in fact does more harm than good by supporting the ego's belief that a problem exists. Most of our problems disappear simply by the process of living life. Werner Erhard statistics show that 66% of clients are cured with psychotherapy. What statistics don't show is that 72% are cured without it. Thomas Szasz, The Myth of Mental Illness. Women handle their problems by complaining and having their friends listen with compassion. That is usually all that is required. Psychotherapists are just expensive friends. Women vent, they feel listened to, they do not solicit advice, which men are wont to give, and hence, why any woman with a brain does not tell a man her problems, they feel loved, which is all any ego wants anyway, and they go home feeling much better. Those who detect that it is not so much a present-day problem that is holding them up, but rather something in their programming which must be dragged to the trash and a new program reinstalled, must seek assistance with the release of the program. Energy therapies, such as RET, Rapid Eye, RapidEyeTechnology.com, EFT, Emotional Freedom, EMOFree.com, TFT, Thought Field, TFTRX.com, can do this. I am reminded of the joke, how many psychotherapists does it take to change a light bulb? Only one, but the light bulb really has to want to change. This honestly is true. People cannot and will not become 81 who they want to become unless there is a desire to change their minds. I've noticed that most suggestions to people go unheard because they don't really want to change. If I change, who will I be? Most people identify with their problems. They believe that this is who they are. The ego believes itself to be that who it thinks it is, and that entity is defined by the problems it creates. After a breakup with a man, when I was 33, my friend asked me to picture my life at age 45. She described it as perfect: career, friends, love, dollar, everything. I began to cry. She explained my tears thus: my ego dictated that in order for me to become who I wanted to be, the woman I believed I was right then would have to die. My ego was actually experiencing grief over its own death. This is how I learned that I am not who my ego thinks I am. I am not my experiences, I am not my job, I am not my body, I am not anything. I am. Since the part of our entire existence, of which we are conscious, is a dream, if something goes wrong, as it often does in our dreams, do we go back into our dream the following night to fix what went wrong? No, we carry on. Trying to correct something that never happened is a waste of our energy, not to mention our time, which we never had in the first place. Asterisk: if you have a constant need to help other people, notice how you must keep them helpless. Asterisk: hope is what keeps all suffering in place. Asterisk: feelings of inferiority and superiority are the same. They both come from fear. Guilt/blame/punishment: the object of your blame is always less of an obstacle than your decision to blame. D. Patrick Miller: there is only one disease, guilt, and it is curable. Kenneth Wapnick: the energy psychologist facilitates the release of guilt because all negative emotions stem from guilt. Anger, for example, is never justified. It is solely a projection of our lack of self-forgiveness. Guilt makes the world go round. As soon as we all stop feeling guilt, we will stop projecting it onto others and making them pay for what we think we did. We did nothing but think. The only way to release the guilt is to forgive ourselves. Never forget that to forgive yourself is to release trapped energy that could be doing good work in the world. Self-prosecution is never noble, it does no one a service. D. Patrick Miller: I incorporate ACIM into energy psychology by getting to the client's emotion, allowing her to be right about her feelings. In other words, I allow her to blame whom she thinks wronged her, when really what is happening is her ego is simply projecting onto another its belief in its own guilt. Since everyone out there is only a reflection of oneself, I gently allow her to see that what she is really doing is blaming herself for putting herself into that situation, then release the guilt for which she is punishing herself, then forgiving herself. Sometimes it is easier to forgive the one whom we believe has wronged us than it is to forgive ourselves, yet since everyone else is ourself, we are all one, then it really doesn't matter. Without fail though, I have seen that guilt/blame/punishment is always the issue in the final analysis, so I always treat the guilt, even when anger seems to be the cause. Once we see how our ego minds have twisted it, we can begin to forgive. Whenever two or more of you are gathered means that all we have to do is join with another, ideally the one with whom we have the grievance. Forgiveness is the means to peace. I don't attempt to undo a lifetime of Catholic guilt training in my sessions, yet I tell my clients this: of all the patients whom I've ever watched as they were dying, it was the Catholics who lingered and suffered. I finally realized that, although they tell a good story about their faith in God, in their hearts they are filled with a fear of God's punishing them for the guilt that has been thrown at them their entire lives from the Church. RCS are the most guilt-ridden people I've ever known, and their manner of dying proves this. I'm sorry for those who have been terrorized by the Church, and I hope that they can begin to undo the damage so that they don't have to suffer needlessly. Our belief in someone's malady only strengthens their fear, thereby corroborating their belief that they need help. As long as we fight cancer, we strengthen it by making it real. In fact, doing anything about anything, even if it seems positive, only strengthens our belief that something is wrong. I'm not talking about doing what comes next in life. Something occurs and we do what it takes to make it the way we want it. I'm talking about the judgment that something is wrong. We make things real by acknowledging them. We bring into existence, and/or keep in existence that which we resist simply by directing our attention to it and trying to correct it. What we resist persists. Energy flows where attention goes. Focus on what you want, not 82 on what you don't want. I no longer complain that cancer patients won't work with me to release the anger, grief, and guilt over their trauma. I now complain that they are not only deceiving themselves and their loved ones, but also paying genocidal big pharma and medical mafia to cause them great physical and/or financial suffering. It seems as if they believe they deserve this treatment based upon their belief in their guilt over the circumstances they created, and yet care not to mention due to its already debilitating effect upon them. I don't mind their subconscious declaration, "I'd rather die than face this," as there is nothing wrong with wanting to die any more than there is something wrong with wanting anything our ego minds want. It is the lack of awareness which is unhealthy. I only wish I could get my mitts on them before they go through this pretense of wanting to live. I might be able to point out to them that there is a much easier, faster, more agreeable way of dealing with their trauma than dying. There exist many energy therapies to assist them in releasing their emotional trauma surrounding an event which they cannot face. Energy work is safe, quick, and does not require the patient to relive the trauma. Trauma just energetically disappears. Cancer is not a terminal disease. That belief is a result of manipulation, as are beliefs concerning finances, education, religion, relationships, etc. I want people to stop believing nonsense, take charge of their circumstances and resultant state of mind by realizing that they, and only they, were powerful enough to have created said circumstances, and so they are powerful enough to create something else. My best example of Dr. Simonton's theory was a patient I had with cancer of the larynx. What does this tell you? He believes he either said something he wished he hadn't or didn't say something he wished he had. So, after rapid calculation of trauma to diagnosis, I asked his wife what occurred about 2 years ago. We got married. Yikes. What's to say to that? Then I realized that saying, "I do," is too easy to undo, ergo, not something over which to develop cancer. So I asked, "Anything else?" Well, the minute we got married, his daughter quit speaking to him. And he had quit speaking to his daughter. I rest my case. For years I told people, curing cancer is as simple as releasing the emotional trauma which caused it, and for years no one seemed interested in my assistance. I remained flabbergasted until I realized that one of the aspects of the cancer personality is that at an unconscious level, cancer patients want to die, or they wouldn't have developed cancer. It is their belief, thanks to medical propaganda, which causes them to think that cancer means they will no longer have to face the trauma or, rather, their interpretation of the trauma which is diminishing their basic life force. Cancer is just socially acceptable suicide. Medical intervention does not cure cancer. For the record, 80% of doctors admit that they would not take their own medicine, meaning that what they advise their patients chemotherapy, radiation, surgery they would not submit to themselves. No one I've ever known has ever died of cancer only from the medical treatment of cancer. Yet, again, subconsciously one submits to the medic's advice because in him, one has an ally in not taking responsibility. One knows she can avoid the reminder of the trauma sooner by acquiescing to the medic's/ego's plan for salvation and dying. Since loved ones are generally horrified by the fact that the patient is dying, as they have been equally conned, they express sadness, etc., and the patient pretends, for their sakes, to want to get healthy again. Nothing could be farther from the truth. If one truly wanted to get better, she would reveal the cause of her illness, the emotional trauma which is literally destroying her, yet she rarely does. Those who do and who support their bodies in the healing process, recover. However, most take their trauma to their graves partly because they are unaware of it and partly because, although initially they feel anger towards another involved in the event, they inevitably blame themselves, feel horrendous guilt over it, and wouldn't dare tell anyone of their part in it, even when the telling would be the first step in saving their lives. I know of many people who have cured their cancer via forgiveness. The body doesn't heal because the body isn't sick. Only the mind can heal because only the mind is sick. The body doesn't suffer, the body doesn't do anything. It only does what the mind tells it to do. Kenneth Wapnick. So, I suggest to my clients to begin, for their own sakes, the process of forgiving whomever it is they believe has caused their distress, remembering that it was only their interpretation of the situation which caused their pain, not the incident itself. Remember Krishnamurti said, there are no problems apart from the mind. As I say, if it is easier to forgive oneself same-sameness, because anger at another is only the ego's attempt to hide from our conscious mind the guilt we feel and the punishment we believe we deserve. Foisting our guilt onto another might afford our egos some vindication, however, we create a downward spiral of anger/attack/guilt/blame/punishment/anger/attack, etc., ad infinitum. Anger management classes suggest that we ought to hang on to our anger and manage it when, in fact, we ought to release it. 83 Then we would no longer have it to manage. This behavior demonstrates that we believe either, 1, causing someone else suffering will ease our own or, 2, we all deserve only suffering. The only way to end it is to forgive, absolve the guilt, and stop an otherwise endless cycle of what doesn't work for anyone. Ultimately, we all will be required to do this. The introduction to A Course in Miracles reads, this is a required course, only the time you take is optional. So, we can do it now or we can do it later. Most still haven't truly integrated the concept that all disease is caused by the mind's interpretation of an emotional trauma. Unfortunately, however, due to the continuous decline of nutrients in our diet for the past 60 years, not to mention an ever-increasing toxic environment, our bodies are operating in a state of starvation. The basic life force required to handle distress, formerly known as living life, is simply no longer available. Our bodies are operating at a deficit, hence, the preponderance of exhaustive immune system diseases and early aging. Nutrients from food used to provide us all we needed to bear the emotional horrors of life. Now, due to lack of nutrients, along with 75,000 environmental toxins which didn't exist prior to 1930, the instant we interpret an event as traumatic, our bodies are overwhelmed and become ill. 60 years ago we could handle whatever came at us, now we succumb. The despondent mind slows the vibration of, thereby restricting oxygen to, the cells which the patient subconsciously relates to the emotional trauma. Cancer cells are anaerobic, they thrive in a condition of reduced oxygen. We all know that toxins are ubiquitous in our present environment: food, air, water, clothing. So, clean that up to the extent of your ability. The one which I consider the scourge, because most are unaware of its effects, is synthetic fragrances, in particular, fabric softeners. No one can heal in a toxic environment, and those who are subjected to that poison are energetically out of alignment 24/7, as it is in bedding as well. I used to tell parents who asked me to work with their ADHD children that if they wash everything with which the child is in contact in a natural detergent about 9 times, this tells you how toxic this stuff is, and they don't see dramatic improvement in the child, I will treat the child for free. They always reported an improvement. Science has discovered that our bodies require essential vitamins/minerals, essential amino acids, essential fatty acids, and now essential long-chain monosaccharides. No matter what your health problem, feeding your body what it requires will allow your body to heal itself. Cancer is one of the easiest diseases to heal, as usually only one system is involved, the immune system, and once that is up and running, it can handle cancer very quickly and efficiently. The body can heal itself, the only issue is the time it takes to do so, which depends upon the number of systems involved: endocrine, neural, etc. Maybe when your body feels better, you can handle facing the emotional trauma which caused the disease in the first place. The ways to health are: 1. Stay away from the medical mafia. 2. Get real air, out of a city, real water, alkaline, antioxidant, and microcluster. See below: real sleep, in a very dark and quiet room, real food, alkaline vegetables, fruits, nuts, and seeds, real exercise, enough to break a sweat to release toxins. 3. Release the emotion surrounding the trauma. Take a look back at the previous 2 years and determine what was the worst thing that ever happened to you in that time and also in your life, then release it via frequency and energy healing. Whilst I was working as an RN, one of the things which exasperated me then and infuriates me now about the medical mafia is their insistence upon diagnoses. I've watched people die as doctors perform their very expensive tests so they can name the disease and treat it according to medical protocol. The entire time, I was inwardly screaming, "Who cares what the disease is? Just get her healthy. You know, real air, water, sleep, food," but they never provided these basic requirements for life. As we all now know, restoring health is not part of the job description of the medical mafia. The number one interest of this industry is to make money, and the manner in which its members do this is by incapacitating patients with drugs which the genocidal pharmaceutical industry panders to doctors via slick salesmen. There is now one big pharma salesman for every 9 doctors, and I happen to know they get paid egregiously more than I ever got paid as an RN. It is easy to know why one is not healthy, because all diseases have the same 3 causes: free radicals, dehydration, and acidosis. Those in the know can now say this with 100% certainty. So, how does one heal these states? Apparently, this is a real head scratcher for the medical mafia. However, I shall let you know. It 84 is by allowing the body to become antioxidized, hydrated, and alkalinized, as no disease can exist in such an environment. Claude Bernard proved the terrain is everything, and that microbes are a result, not a cause, of disease. This information was deliberately withheld until 1975, when Louis Pasteur's dying grandson revealed the fraud, and yet, the medical mafia still operates on Pasteur's century-old myth. Since we cannot control, 100% of the time, the quality of the air we breathe, our number one requirement for life, it is absolutely fabulous, that we can now control the quality of the water we drink, our number two requirement for life. If we drink alkaline, microcluster, antioxidant water, our bodies, in their own infinite wisdom and their newly alkalinized, hydrated, and antioxidized state, will completely get rid of cancer, heart disease, diabetes, obesity, Alzheimer's, arthritis, fibromyalgia, insomnia, and any other organ/system diseases. Separation/forgiveness.